You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we are smoking the Partagas Black Label. You know, in preparation for Black Friday savings and whatnot.
Yeah. And if you've smoked the Partagas Black Label in the past, this one has they've just recently did kind of a repackaging, rebranding. So now this thing looks even blacker and has like a cool tactical black ring on it. And we were smoking the pyramid size. I hadn't smoked a lot of pyramids.
No, I mean, which it's kind of, you know, interesting because, I mean, the pyramid is still dubbed, you know, a 6x60. But yeah, the tapered end just gives a unique mouthfeel. And, The composition overall of this cigar, I mean, this thing has a Medio Tiempo Connecticut wrapper with a La Vega Especial Dominican binder and Nicaraguan Lajero and Pilato Cubano Lajero fillers.
Yeah, and double Lajero.
The reason I wanted to throw that out is this wrapper is extremely oily, leading to a extremely smooth mouthfeel.
And it's black as fuck.
And why is it black as fuck? Are we going to tell the folks what we're actually...
Well, we figured it kind of went with this week's topic, which is the new release of Venom, which we're kind of, late getting to this. But hey, it's still in theaters right now, so technically it's still, on topic. It's still topical.
I'll allow it.
If you're not familiar with the pyramid style of cigar, it's like a torpedo, where a torpedo is straight but then has this long tapered end. But with a pyramid, the taper goes through the entire body of the cigar. So it's like, starts, 60 ring gauge at the front and then just tapers all the way to a point at the end.
That's like a large blunt.
Yeah. For y'all that know what that is.
And if you don't know, are we really friends?
Oh,
dear.
So, yeah, it's Venom's black. Black Friday's black. So we figured we had to get something that was, a little bit more than Maduro for this episode.
So far, I have not seen any, ham, turkey, sweet potato, pecan pie flavored cigars. So I mean,
CAO had that pumpkin spice cigar, but yeah, I've not seen.
I still have a small shred of dignity that I'm going to hold on to.
I've yet to attempt that. Yeah, that was one thing. Like when those holiday cigars all went on clearance, like that was the last thing to go. Was like the it's like we can't get these pumpkin cigars cheap enough to get rid of them. Oh. Yeah,
I don't know. We probably should have did it. I mean, we're pretty basic. I mean, we could have put our, pants and boots and pants and boots and boots.
I mean, it is Han Solo season.
Yes, very much so.
And if you are going to, go to space and pick up some alien symbiotes and try to fight off a symbiote invasion, you should crawl in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. And it goes in any liquid. You can even drop it in your pumpkin spice lattes if you're celebrating the season that way.
And if you're not, are you even living?
Baste your fucking turkey in it, man. Strike Force turkey for Thanksgiving.
I mean, it does have that.
Fight off the tryptophan.
A lemon zest. I mean, that could work. Keep you awake for those, post-Thanksgiving mill football games.
Yeah, because there's always that, post-turkey tryptophan coma on Thanksgiving. Strike Force Energy will help you fight that off and, fight off your relatives if, because That's always a thing too. Or if you're going to participate in one of the Black Friday fist fights, you definitely get jacked up on some Strikeforce. Just take it as a pre-workout before you go into battle.
There we go. All right, so I'm going to circle back around to the cigar. Just because I think it begs to be said that we were talking about Thanksgiving. This actually has a little bit of an herbal taste to it.
A little stuffing.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I am going to go ahead and say, though, that right off the bat, definitely full body, full strength, and groovy and delicious.
Yeah, definitely, rich and robust, but it's, some herbal, earthy characters, even like a little nuttiness to it. So yeah, this is be a good Thanksgiving post turkey cigar to go with your Strikeforce and pumpkin spice lattes. And with that, we'll be right back.
Knock knock, let the devil in, malevolent as I've ever been, head is spinning, this medicine screaming, dick dick dick, let us in, it dick dick like a solid ball, let your Allen pole, bedridden, should have been dead a long time ago. Liquid Tylenol, gelatin, think my skeleton's melting, wicked, I get all high when I think I smell the scent of elephant manure, hell, I'm in Kahlua, screw it, to hell with it, I went through hell with accelerants and blew up myself again, Volkswagen, tailspin, bucket matches my pale skin, Manwin, went from Hellman's and being rail thin, flamfit, scribble jam, rap Olympics, 97, freak Nick, how can I be down mean, bazaar in Florida, Bruce Room, slept on the Florida, motel then, Dr. Dre said hell yeah, and I got it stamped like a postcard, word to mailman, and I know they're gonna hate, but I don't care, I barely can wait to hit him with the snare and the bass square in the face, this fucking world better prepare to get laced, because they're gonna taste my...
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time to get symbiotic up in here.
Yeah, I
that's the weirdest, I don't know.
I don't know either. All right, so I gotta say, I really held out far too long before seeing this movie. Anytime, Sony comes into the mix, I remember they gave me Emo Spider-Man.
Yeah, which was the first, iteration of Venom, which was, 2007 maybe? And it sucked. I mean, it had fucking Foreman from that 70s show as Venom. And it was like, especially, when he takes over Spider-Man, and instead of making him like in the comics, cartoons, any iteration we've seen as of the Venom Spider-Man combo, it just kind of gives him anger issues. It makes him like stronger and just like, Hulk rage. But this time it just made him emo, and he even did a fucking jazz musical number. The fuck?
So I still had, bad precursors about that experience. So, it was fast forward.
It was kind of like, for people who were super fans of Venom and always wanted to see him done properly in a movie, it was the equivalent of us Deadpool fans with that Wolverine Origins version of Deadpool. How, excited and then ultimately offended and felt betrayed. It was the same for fans of Venom because we're like, the fuck is this bullshit?
Or anybody that's ever played an EA game ever.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward to 2018. So we start talking about in news about this movie, Venom, and we get our very first look at Venom. Wait a second. No, we don't. Because, we never actually see the symbiote in the first trailer. So right off the rip, all kinds of negative, backlash and, publicity. And then, they're like, all right, we got to make this right, So we get a second trailer, only a couple of days later that actually showcases Venom.
In the second trailer, at least it showed Venom at the end where that first one we talked about, it was such a, and I got to say, people, non-Marvel trailer makers have been just horrible at making trailers. And we're just like, if you're doing a movie about Venom, he should be on, Front Street. That first trailer was just Tom Hardy running, Tom Hardy freaking out in a hospital bed, more of Tom Hardy running. There was like no venom whatsoever.
Which, don't get me wrong, I'm sold on Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy is, you know, a badass in his own right, but yeah, it can't be, you know, Tom Hardy is Venom.
No,
without, you know, a Venom counterpart. It just doesn't work. So, you know, it's like, all right, you know, we're past the summer blockbusters and everything else, and oh, look at here. Here's Venom. You know what? I don't know. At first I really said I was not going to pay to see it in theaters, and then we decide it's a podcast topic, and I pay to see it in theaters, and I go into it with really, really low expectations, and the film fucking was fantastic. It was great. It was so much higher than my low expectations that I may be hyperinflating, you know, the movie, but I'm like, this worked.
and it was like, you know, made for $116 million, made $780 million, which, while not MCU numbers, that's pretty high. And it was, I mean, it has set some box office records for the month of October. And, you know, and we, like I said, we initially had our reservations going into this, directed by Ruben Fleischer, was like, A, how do you do a movie about Venom with no Spider-Man? Because traditionally, Spider-Man is tied into the origin of Venom. And then we're also like, how are you going to do a Venom movie if he's the main character? Is he a hero? Is this a bad guy story? Like, we were highly confused about what we were going to get when this initially when this came out. And then also, like, PG-13 Venom. I mean, it's, Venom is almost like Deadpool, kind of, like, we've always said should have been treated like a horror movie, because, you know, Venom's usually, at least in the villainous incarnations of Venom, is like just a bloody character. I mean, he bites fuckers' heads off.
Spoiler alert, he still bites fuckers' heads off.
Yeah, you just don't get a good blood splurt or...
So, you know, with no further warning, we're going to jump into the spoilers.
So, 2018's Sony MCU, which, now that they've kind of sharing Spider-Man, you know, maybe eventually Tom Holland will show up in a sequel or something.
That's just going to be confusing. Tom Hardy and Tom Holland, like, too many Tom H's.
And that's one thing how they kind of, I did like, because they're trying to like keep it separate from Spider-Man, at least initially, is the story took place in San Francisco. So they're like, yeah, like, so they kind of apparently, and they even mention in there that kind of something happened to, you know, Tom Hardy plays Eddie Brock, who is a kind of an updated journalist. He's like almost like a internet journalist, blogger type situation. He works for a news network. And apparently he got pissed somebody off in New York, so he gets sent to, he moves to San Francisco and works for a different like cable organization or something like that. So it's like, all right, let's get him as far away from Spider-Man as possible, because it seems like Avengers only exist in New York. So let's get him on the other coast, so we don't have to deal with any coming across any superheroes or anybody asking the question like, yeah, where's the superheroes?
I mean,
I suppose you could run into Ant-Man, but that's about it on the West Coast.
And I gotta say, as a standalone movie, I think this was one of the better adaptations. You know, I was much like you in not really sure the direction they were taking Venom, you know? But, I mean, in this iteration, I'm gonna say it's pretty much just the anti-hero. I mean, you know, him and Deadpool could be distant cousins and just, you know, kicking it. You know, I mean, because I felt like they took a lot of that Deadpool model and applied it to Venom. Because there were parts that were sort of gritty, but the humorous aspect of it, and, you know, just the symbiotic voice in my head, parasite takeover aspect gave it a humorous element.
Yeah, because especially, I mean, in the comics, he's been a villain, and then there's other times where he's kind of been a vigilante, and I know in some iterations, like I remember in some of the cartoons with that, they had Agent Venom, where he bonded with someone where it was like they had equal control, and he kind of became an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a little while in some iterations. It was Agent Venom. And this one, they've kind of, I mean, he kind of starts off as just a, like an escaped parasite, but then eventually kind of as he's, they kind of put in that, like, you know, that some of these symbiotes has to kind of have a match. If not, they'll just kind of use up their host and move on to the next. So when he pairs with Eddie Brock, there's a little bit more, I guess, survivability in it. But as he's kind of shares a brain with him long enough, he starts to, like, all right, you humans aren't so bad. So he's still kind of like, I want to eat people, but Eddie Brock kind of acts as his conscience. So he's like, I'm not going to eat people randomly. I'm just going to eat bad people. So it's, you know, he's like, you know, kind of a looks like, you know, in future installments going to be more of like a, I guess, a Punisher type character.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, in this film here, we only get to see three of the, you know, symbiotes, Venom being one, you know, your main symbiote, you know, foe, and then another symbiote who's just kind of there to fill space and not really play a major part in much of anything.
Yeah, because, you know, back it up, there's a space, almost kind of an Elon Musk type character of, what's his name, Drake, who runs a company called, like, the Life Agency or whatnot, and they've sent
Carlton
out...
Drake.
Yeah, Carlton Drake, with the Life Foundation, and kind of, like I said, Elon Musk-esque, is also involved in space exploration and stuff, and one of their space probes checks out this comet that has, they find, symbiotic alien life, and the ship crashes returning to Earth, and one of them escapes through a, you know, emergency worker in, like, you know, Malaysia or wherever this thing crashed, and starts slowly making its way back.
Kind of gave me the 28 Days Later vibe.
Yeah, where it's like hopping from like person to person, and it like takes over like a little girl at one point. I mean, it's kind of fucking creepy. But and the other three symbiotes end up in this lab, and well, you know, Carlton Drake, you know, is like I said, we've always theorized that Elon Musk might actually be a Bond villain. This guy's like all like, I'm doing all this philanthropy and helping the world, but in secret he's like tricking homeless people into like, you know, hey, we'll give you food and money if you involve in these experiments, but you got to sign a basically away your rights. And he's like, because these symbiotes cannot live outside of an oxygen breathing person. And so they start feeding homeless people to symbiotes, trying to find somebody who'll match. And, you know, some of them live, most of them don't. And here comes Eddie Brock, whose girlfriend is the lawyer for that company. And he breaks into her computer and finds out they're doing all this shady shit, and actually gets an interview with the guy and confronts him on all his shady shit, and gets, since this guy's so super powerful, gets fired and discredited, loses his girlfriend because she gets fired as well, and he just becomes basically a alcoholic ex-reporter bum.
I think that was a very interesting dynamic too on, you know, the introduction to human emotion, you know, because so much of this film just revolves around happy life, and then all of a sudden everything you've ever known disappearing and spiraling out of control.
Yeah. And, you know, up to this point too, when we see Eddie, he's very sure of himself as a reporter, but once he loses everything, he kind of becomes like more of a pussy. You know, he's like, you know, they,
he's no longer, you know, confident. I mean, dude, that's a big confidence boost, or, you know, a blow to one's confidence, self-esteem, and everything else. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he really lost his, like, identity of self. Like, he didn't know who he was. So, you see him, like, he's in this shithole apartment, and his neighbor's like a heavy metal guy who plays music at all hours of the night, and he's like just too, you know, passive to like tell the guy to, like, you know, turn his shit down. He just, like, just lets everybody, you know, walk all over him. And even when he's in the his little bodega grocery store, you know, the lady comes in and gets, like, held up, and he just kind of, like, just kind of cowers in the back and lets this lady get, like, you know, and threatened and whatnot. But then, you know, this scientist who is kind of fed up with what the, you know, decides the What the Life Foundation doing is shady, comes to him and, like, hey, here's your, I will get you in there. Here's where you can get the evidence to stop them, what they're doing. And he goes in and sees one of the...
I mean, he just, right off the rips, breaks the very first rule. When somebody says, don't touch anything, and then you start touching shit.
Yeah. And, of course, he sees this homeless girl who he's been, like, helping out that lives outside the grocery store has become one of the, you know, experiments. And being a dumbass and, like, you know, rule number two, never free anything that's in a biohazard containment cell. And gets... kind of like Spider-Man getting bit by the radioactive spider, he gets, you know, bit by the radioactive homeless person. And Venom jumps ship. But yeah, that whole, like, lead up to Venom taking, like, I guess he's in the adjustment period before Venom, like, fully, like, makes himself known. That's some of the funniest parts of the movie, I think, when he's, like, just starting off, like, just, because at first he's like, I'm sick or something. And then when the freaking neighbor starts jamming the music and he, like, goes over to talk to him and this kind of freaking, and the guy's like, yeah, fuck off. And he's like, Venom face for a second. And he's like, turn it off. He's like, oh, yes, sir. And then when he goes to, like, see his ex-girlfriend, cause her new boyfriend's a doctor and they're in this fancy restaurant, and he just starts, like, freaking out and getting, cause Venom's getting hungry, and he's like, goes to eat, like, a lobster, and he's like, oh, this is dead. And then he's like, I'm getting hot. And this jumps into the freaking lobster tank and is, like, taking a bath with the lobster and, like, eating raw lobster. And everyone's like, this dude's on some shit.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely off his rocker. But, I mean, that's, you know, once again, the comedic element, you know, really offset. See, I think if they tried to make this a super serious film, it, you know, it wouldn't have the same. So, I mean... I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say it again. They took a lot of pages directly out of the Deadpool playbook on this film. I mean, just the interactions between, you know, Eddie Brock and Venom and stuff. It's like, you know, people are like, man, we want the voices in Deadpool's head. And it's like, well, it's not Deadpool, but you got the voices in the head thing going on.
Yeah, that's true. Because it first started off just like single words. And eventually when he you know, gains enough, I guess, strength to fully communicate with him. Yeah, it did remind me of much of that, because that's one of the only complaints of the Deadpool movie is we don't get the voices in his head. And this is like, oh yeah, it's like just the interaction between him and, because a lot, you know, that's probably the hardest part of portraying Venom is portraying the inner monologue when it's him and Eddie back and forth. And some of the conversations they have is hysterical. Especially when, because like I said, Eddie Brock's kind of afraid of heights.
I think it's, you know, before you get into that, I mean, it's a very cool dynamic because I don't think Eddie realizes, you know, the power and the ability that Venom has. So it's like, you know, Venom says, you know, do something, and it's like, no, that's going to kill me. And it's like, well, it can't possibly kill you because then it's going to kill me because I live through you. I digress. Continue on, sir.
But yeah, like, before we ever actually see Venom, and we'll get to, like, my favorite interaction between them in a second, you know, of course, like, Drake ends up, all of his pet symbiotes end up dying. And so he's like, shit, we got to recover, like, the one that got away. So he sends all his, like, mercenary guys after Eddie Brock. And then that's kind of, like, the first time that, like, you know, they're starting to have, like, a conversation where he's like, I'm not just crazy. I'm not, this voice in my head is actually a thing. And they start, you know, kind of talking a little bit. And he's like, people are coming for you. We've got to get out of here. And, like, you know, just kind of, you know, before he goes, like, full Venom suit, just the, like, the little arms coming out, that, like, fight scene of, like, all of a sudden he's like, oh, shit, I've got, you know, he kind of takes over Brock, but doesn't like fully venom out and just kind of gives him like skills and power for a minute. He's like beating the shit out of all these dudes. And I was like, it just like kind of like him like, I don't know what I'm doing. Sorry. I'm beating your ass, but I don't know how.
I don't know. I think, you know, the motorcycle scene when, you know, all of the life people are chasing after him and stuff, and it's like, you know, Eddie's like, all right, I got to get away, but I can't go too fast, you know, and the Venom arm just like, nah, we're going full throttle, you know?
Yeah. And, so when he jumps and comes up off the bike, and then the goo just comes out and grabs the bike and pulls him back down, I'm like, that's badass. But right before they, like, more of them show up, when he beats the shit out of, like, the first group, and he's, like, standing there like, what the fuck did this do? He's like, what do we do next? He's like, all right, now we bite all their heads off, we stack the bodies in that corner and the heads in that corner. What? Come on, it'll be funny. It's like, what the hell, man?
I mean, there's no ground rules established yet. I mean, at this point, anything goes. I mean,
yeah, because when he first takes over, it's very much Venom is like, no, you're my meat puppet, I'm in control. And even, like, once they get away from everybody and they wind up, like, you know, yeah, out on that dock or whatever, and I did like that part too, because it's like a lot of the time it's just a guy talking to himself, but then they actually had the head come out so he could, like, you know, they could look at each other and talk, and he's basically like, you know, I'm here to just, you know, my people are here to destroy your world, and if you, like, you know, help me out, then I'll help you out, and, you know, you get to live if you, like, you know, help me with my plan or whatnot.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We kill you last, you know, type thing. But then at the longer he's in connection with Eddie, he gets a little bit more, I guess, humanity to him. Like the symbiote definitely has a progression of character.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, they see that, you know, humans are complex and they're not all the same. You know, I think in a lot of aspects, you know, the symbiote is very parasitic in nature, and they view humans as parasites themselves. So it's like, you know, a battle of, you know, two self-absorbed entities.
Yeah, because it's very much they're like, we'll take over and just use up what we want and then move on to the next person. But then, you know, as they're bound together longer, they go from a parasitic relationship to a true symbiotic relationship, where they're like in kind of in, you know, like I said, Eddie kind of acts as his conscience, and Venom kind of acts as Eddie's courage. And, like, first thing he's like, all right, I'll help you, but you got to help me stop this douchebag from killing people. So he's like, we've got to go and turn over all this evidence I filmed to my old reporter buddies, which that's another a character who shows up. The head of security for the news network is the guy who plays Marcus on the Mayans. Like, I'm so used to seeing that guy in, like, several movies as, like, badass biker or, like, mafia dude. Seeing that guy in a suit is just weird to me.
It was, you know,
Alvarez or whatever, not Marcus.
Yeah,
but
yeah. It was very different. But, I mean, it worked. I mean, but it was very, you know, he's like, you know, talking about the excitement for his kids and whatnot.
Yeah,
it's
so
like,
weird
what?
Seeing him as, like, a nice guy. It's like,
you're supposed to be, you know, beating up people and, you know, kicking it with the, you know, MC and, you know, just, you know, all about that cartel life, and not so much about that cartel life now, are we? Now you're picking on people because they parked the bike out front.
Yeah, it's so weird seeing him as, like, a freaking rent-a-cop after years of seeing him as either a mob boss or a cartel guy. Oh, and then, too, like, that interaction between, you know, Venom's like, can I eat him? Like, no, you're not eating my friend. Come on, we need to get in. Let me eat him. No, stop it. You don't touch him. And he's like, damn it, I got to get up to the office. Like, oh, you wanted to get up to the office. Why didn't you say that? So they get freaking just Venom's out, climbs up the building, busts in the window. And he's like, all right, we're here. And he's like, you know, leaves the video and the note, like, you know, do the right thing, asshole. And then Venom's like, all right, let's jump. And he's like, what? Because Eddie Brock's afraid of heights. And then that, my favorite part was that cut from him looking over the edge of the building and Venom saying jump, to him in the elevator going down, and then the voice goes, pussy. Just so disappointed in him. it's like a weird buddy cop.
I mean, it was a very, very, you know, good dynamic. And like you said, you know, the way that they show the symbiote exposing itself, you know, when they have interaction together, you know, does a great, you know, gives a visual for the dialogue. Yeah. So it's not just a audio thing.
Because even it's like, you know, either it's him looking at a reflection where in the reflection he sees the symbiote, or he literally the symbiote like manifests a little head, kind of like Men in Black 2 or Johnny Knoxville had that that second head that would come up out of his backpack.
But yeah, so they step out of the elevator, and lo and behold, you never take the safe route.
Because yeah, now the SWAT guys are there. And the thing is, too, it's like, when you get to that scene, it's like, all right, this isn't the Life Foundation goons. This is like, you know, actual cops and whatnot. So he's like, defend us, but don't hurt them. So they all like they all start gassing up and, you know, throwing like tear gas and stuff. He's like, all right, mask up. He's like, yeah, time to play. And just like starts beating the shit out of all those dudes, but doesn't kill anybody that we know of. So he's, like I said, still, he kind of acts as, you know, his conscience at times and whatnot. I say a whatnot a lot.
That's okay. My phrase is, you know. You know?
True enough. We got to come up with new phrases.
We'll work on that.
Maybe by episode 300 we'll have new phrases.
I don't want to think that far ahead.
Oh.
Maybe we'll have symbiotic relationships by then.
But, yeah, and at that point, too, his ex shows up to, like, pick him up or whatnot, and there it goes again. And sees Venom in the full thing, because at this point, they're like, you know, they think it's some kind of, like, cancer or parasite or something, but they don't realize the full extent of what it is until she comes to, like, pick him up again and sees him in the full suit and everything, and is like, oh, shit, like, this is more than just a infection. It's a full-on, you know, alien encounter here. But to her credit, she didn't, like, immediately, like, oh, shit. She's like, no, we got to get you to the hospital, get you checked out. And when he gets in the car, and because, like I said, Venom's fully connected in his brain, he's like, you really like this chick. And he's like, shut up. And he's like, come on, tell her you love her. I know you love her. This is like he's talking. Like, this is funny as shit. Like, he's like, this is the little conversation he has with himself on the way
you
to the hospital.
You never apologized.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like I said, it's just I love the interactions of him and Venom, where Venom's like trying to, like, you know, it's like his own little psychiatrist in his head.
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe Venom wants to know what it's like to get inside her. I don't know. You know? Whoa. Did we go there?
Yeah. Oh, it's just, yeah. When they get to the hospital and start checking him out, and the doctor is like, well, your internal organs are like failing. And at this point he thinks Venom is like using him, and Venom's trying to say, no, Eddie, you know, I'm your friend. You know, the damage has been done. I can fix, you know, it's not an issue, buddy. And he just kind of loses that trust with him, and they end up using the vibrations of the MRI machine to extract Venom. But then when Venom starts, like, you know, takes over the dog and is like trying to escape, but then the Life Foundation guys show up not knowing that he's no longer in possession of Venom and capture Eddie. And they have that moment with, like, her and the dog are looking at each other. It's like, I'm pretty sure that dog's Venom.
Well, you just see, like, the, you know, the glazing of the eyes. And it's like, you know, it's almost like the song by Garth Brooks, The Thunder Rolls, you know? The lightning flashes in her eyes and, you know, he knows, she knows. And, you know, it was kind of like that moment.
I was waiting to see like a full Venom dog to start chewing on people. But then that interaction too, when they get him back to the Life Foundation and he's finally talking to Drake, you know, the other symbiote that we keep getting cuts to of him like hopping from body to body trying to get to the Life Foundation, because his ultimate goal is he wants to get to a shuttle so he can get back to his comet and gather up all the other symbiotes and bring them down to Earth, you know, for now that they've figured out this is suitable for invasion. And of course, you know, the, you know, Drake, who's wanting the power of the symbiote, agrees to join with this thing, which we get our other bad symbiote, who is called Riot. Venom and Riot. I mean, it sounds like some, like, you know, badass like metal band.
Not like Quiet Riot.
Yeah. Oh, but that whole, what he's questioning, he's like, hey man, I had like a symbiote up my ass like all day. And he's like, he freaking turns in and he's like, oh, he's got a butt monkey too, or something like that. He's got something in his ass too. It's just but when they take him out to like execute him in the woods, and all of a sudden Lady Venom shows up, because Venom is like, you know, used his girlfriend to track him back down.
So before you go on to this next stage, do you think that Venom has used her, or she has, you know, realized the dog is Venom and I need to get, you know, him back to Eddie?
I'm pretty sure it was like...
How do you think that played out?
Well, because you get that whole, like, you know, they're both trying to get to him before, like, they get dragged away, and they kind of look at each other. I'm pretty sure she's like, you know, I don't like you, but we got to save Eddie. Like, yeah, come on in.
Hop on in. Let's go for a ride.
Because, I mean, he could have just, like, you know, jumped into any other person in the hospital, or, you know, or hell, the dog could have chased down one of the freaking life guys and jumped in one of the mercenaries and followed them to the to the base. But instead, like, he, you know, tag teamed with the girlfriend. And it's kind of funny too, because like, she's still in full like Venom thing and like picks him up and like kisses him, and then, you know, Venom transfers back to Eddie and their kids, and she's like, that was his idea. So like, Venom wanting to make out with Eddie. I mean, yeah, it's okay. It's, yeah.
Lady Venom's kind of hot, though.
Yeah. Wasn't bad. But, except for the whole teeth thing.
Eh, you know. Get beyond that. That's why one must establish trust. The ultimate level of trust. How do I keep my head?
Oh.
Both of them.
But yeah, once he comes back to him and he's like, all right, listen, there's another, he's like, the other symbiote. He's like, yeah, all right, I did tell you that we were here to invade your planet and destroy Earth. But now that I've been with you for a while, I realize humans aren't that bad, and I'm kind of a loser on my planet. So like, you're a loser on your planet, so we should probably like stop them from coming here. I mean, it was kind of just a sudden change of heart for the character. I don't know if it's like, you know, he's been I don't know. It was kind of like a hard turn of, you know, why is he suddenly wanting to protect humanity?
Well, maybe there's a venomness out there that he lost. And now that Eddie's lost, you know, his girl, Venom's like, these humans, they have emotion. They have feelings. They're not just, you know...
He's been tainted by love. He's like, I like feeling good.
Maybe it was the moment he felt in the kiss. I don't know. I mean, that's what made this movie, you know, kind of great is, you know, behind it all is the romance story. Oh, wait, they took that from Deadpool as well.
Yeah, to me that, I don't know, the sudden change of heart... where he now wants to protect not just Eddie, but all of humanity, was kind of a hard turn for me. But then also it's like, I'm a loser on my planet and I don't want to go back. I don't want Earth to become like my planet is, because all those people are assholes and all they want to do is like war and take over. And I'm tired of just being a soldier and kind of going from planet to planet, sucking everything dry. I kind of want to like chill out here and eat nachos and do all the cool human things. Instead of just constant warfare. So he's like, we better stop this asshole from like going and freeing everybody on my world. So then you get the epic fight of Venom versus Riot.
Which I love that line, you know, of, you know, Venom's like, you know, Eddie's like, well, I can do all this amazingly cool shit with you now. And he's like, yeah, you haven't seen anything yet. And then it's like, so how much of a chance do we have, you know, with this rat guy? I'm figuring about zero.
Yeah. He's like, we're definitely going to get our asses kicked. But like I say, you know, the courage is not the absence of fear. It's being scared and acting anyway. So they're like, yeah, because I think, you know, with his time with Eddie, he's kind of absorbed his emotion. So now Eddie's love for Annie is kind of like tainted venom, where he's like, I love this human too, and I don't want her to die or anyone else. So let's go blow up this spaceship. Oh.
Love got us in, and love will get us out.
But yeah, that...
I felt like that was a country music reference somewhere in there.
Probably.
Oh, it definitely was.
But that, like, that running battle between them two trying to get to the spaceship, where, I mean, throwing spikes and jumping out of each other's body, and then, like, Eddie and, like, the other guys, like, fighting while Venom and Ren are fighting. It was kind of shot real well. I mean, because you get, say, like, Transformers, like, the big action sequences, it's almost too much visually, where it's like, I can't follow the action because there's just so much crammed into one screen. And especially where you're dealing with two mostly black blobs fighting each other. There is a dangerous of like visual overload where you're like, I can't follow what's going on. But I think they did a good job of it, you know, not losing the audience during that action sequence.
No, I mean, I think they definitely did a great job. Like you said, you know, because it pans out and you'll see, you know, the humans of, you know, Eddie and Drake, you know. But then you'll see the symbiotes, you know, up, you know, rise up out of them, you know. It was artistic and I think very well done. Like you said, you know, at no time did I feel like... Like I do a lot of times when I see, you know, DC movies and I'm like, okay, great. There's more darkness on more darkness and everybody's wearing black and, oh, I see some eyes.
Wait, I don't know who's fighting who. I got lost.
Does that guy have question marks?
Yeah.
Oh, nope. That was just a stripe.
And even like, you know, Annie, you know, still trying to, because even he's like, he tells her to like go home or whatnot, you know. And Venom's like, yeah, she's totally not going to listen. I've been in her head. You know she's not going to listen to us. But she tries to help out because she knows like that whatever sound and heat are his weaknesses. So she sets off all the alarms and shit and, you know, trying to like help the fight. And then when the spaceship blows up and like, you know, Venom kind of does a whole parachute thing and saves Eddie and fries Riot and Drake. Riot and Drake, that's also a decent metal band name. Drake Riot. That is a metal front man.
Drake the rapper wouldn't have it. He would riot.
Well, hopefully it's a quiet riot.
Too many puns.
Oh.
I mean, it worked for Venom. Maybe it can make our podcast great, too. That's what our podcast needs. We need a symbiote.
Yeah. And a Google guy.
Google guy symbiote.
And even as he's, like, blowing up and, like, the fireball's coming, you know, he says goodbye to Eddie, too. So you're like, you pretty much, you think, you know, the symbiote went from being a parasite to sacrificing himself for Eddie and, you know, healing the damage and everything. You know, so it's like, you know, he definitely went from fuck humanity to it had a real good, the character of Venom had a transformation. And then, you know, and that's, especially when you're dealing with a monster, it's very easy to make them one dimensional and not have any kind of character progression. In a movie, especially like, you know, a Sony movie. But you came to care about this, you know, alien monster.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know. Maybe that's what, you know, like I didn't find, you know, one of my pet peeves with films is the introduction of a bunch of pointless characters just to have them die.
Yeah.
And the main five or six characters in Venom, I felt like you become emotionally invested in, outside of maybe Carlton Drake, because you're just like, man, this guy's a douche and you want him to die.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't die as quick as you want him to.
But, and even the Annie's new boyfriend, the doctor, that guy was, you know, was pretty cool. I was like, it was so weird because he's like Reed Scott, played by Dan Lewis. He's like, okay, my fiance's ex-boyfriend has showed up, but he's like, I'm a doctor. I want to, yeah, hey, I'm a fan of yours. He's like, there's like, it's so weird that there's no like animosity or jealousy from him. He's like, oh, I'm a doctor, and you're obviously fucked up. I need to help you. He's like, really wants to be Eddie's buddy, even though that he's like, you know, a huge threat to him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He really.
I kind of like the guy. It's like it's you know.
It's almost like, you know, were they friends? You know, it's just like, you know, well, fuck it, I'm just going to go whole next level and, you know, start banging his best friend.
yeah, it was.
That's what all mature adults would do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was super weird.
But, you know, because, I mean, Eddie, you know, he's like, what? He has a key. Yeah, how else do you expect them to get in? Like, what? You let him in?
But, yeah, post saving the world and him and Annie are having coffee on their doorstep and stuff. You get, and she's like, you know, kind of, you know, sorry that Venom's gone, you know, and he's like, oh yeah, me too. And then, cause you, at this point you think Venom's gone, and then all of a sudden you hear the voice like, come on, tell her you love her. You should kiss her. It's like, shut up. And she's like, he is gone. Oh yeah, he's totally gone. Come on, man. She will be ours. It's so funny. And then, you know, of course he starts to walk off and we get, potentially our last Stan Lee cameo, because I don't know if he's, you know, and we'll talk about it more when we get to the news.
No, I think I remember seeing articles that this won't be his final.
I know he was banking some, but I don't know how many more he's filmed. But, you know, the Stan Lee cameo, because, you know, in the last Guardians, they admitted that he was the Watcher. You know, and you, so it's like all these little cameos he's had across all the various Marvel universes, they're like, yeah, he's the same guy. He's the Watcher or something. And he's the one that's like, you know, when he sees them and he's walking his dog, he's like, don't give up on her. Neither, you know, both of you. So it's like, you know, he knows that, like, it's like, without like admitting, he's like, I know fucking you're Venom. It's the way he says it. He's like, y'all shouldn't give up on her, both of you. And then Venom's like, what is that? I want to eat it. Like, it's like, no, you can't eat his dog. Come on, we got to eat something. Your liver's starting to look awfully tasty. But yeah, I like to have that whole conversation too. Like, what do we do now? And he's like, I want to eat people. And he's like, you can't eat. All right, I'll let you eat bad people. I was like, well, how do we know, like, who's the good people and who's the bad people? He's like, I'll let you know. You can feel it. You'll know who's a bad guy. He's like, all right, yeah, I trust you. And they go to the little bodega to get some food. And sure enough, like the bad guy that had been, you know, extorting the nice little old lady that ran the place is there trying to rob her again. And then he's like, can I eat this guy? And he's like, all right, don't eat everybody. Well, you can beat the shit out of bad people, but you shouldn't eat everybody. And then he just goes full Venom and is like, picks the dude up. And he's like, if you ever come here again, I will bite off all your arms and your face. And he's like, so you'll just be this, you know, whatever, legless, armless turd that has to roll down the street and you can still hear everyone shrieking at your horribleness. And he's like, you understand? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, but on second thought, I am hungry. And just bites his head off. But it's like Venom trying to be intimidating. where he's like, I'm not going to kill this guy, but I'm going to make sure he doesn't come back. And he's like, I'm just going to bite off all your arms and legs, and you're just going to be a turd who rolls down the street. It was just, it's like a bad guy trying to pretend to be a hero. He's like, I'm trying to go full, like, you know, Batman and scare the shit out of this guy, but it just comes out really weird and awkward.
But it lands a lot of comedic relief.
Yes. But then he bites his head off anyway. and then looks at the old, it turns back into Eddie, and the old lady is just in complete shock. He's like, sorry, I got a parasite. And just walks out. And he's like, motherfucker, did you call me a parasite? He's like, I was only kidding. Come on.
But I don't know, for all of that to occur, I mean, granted, you know, she's used to, you know, probably, I get the implication that she's been, you know, extorted for quite a while. And, you know, for somebody to go full Venom, bite off a head, she was relatively calm. I mean, maybe it was just a shock. But I was like, you know, there wasn't any, like, shrill freaking the fuck out panic or anything that I probably would have.
It's San Francisco. She's probably seen some weird shit. Not only it's Chinatown, San Francisco. She's seen some weird shit.
So can we eat it? Oh.
Just Stan walking his dog, and he's like, what is that? Can I eat it? It looks tasty. No, you can't eat his dog.
Was that the same dog from the hospital? I felt like it was the same dog from the hospital.
You know, I don't remember. That would have been weird if it was the same dog.
Like...
But it was the same dog. He was that dog at some point. Like,
I mean, he should.
How does he not know what it is? He yeah. was a dog at one point. He's like, did I look like that when I was a dog?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, because you know, we wind back to the testing at the labs. You know, where they're, you know, using mice and rabbits, and you know, trying to find a suitable host. And everything. So, I mean, you would feel like they would know, but maybe they don't really see the outward appearance.
Yeah. He's like, I've only seen it from the inside. Yeah, that is kind of a plot hole, because he had been exposed to dogs before. But now he's like, I don't know what that is, but it's tasty. Let's eat it.
But then again, that could have just been a ruse to fuck with Eddie, because that happens quite a bit.
And the thing is, like, Venom doesn't have a stomach. So when he bites people's head off, is Eddie having to digest a human head? Is he going to the bathroom later and shitting out a skull? Like, how does, like, Venom...
See, now we're... Now I'm starting to get into the plot holes, and it's not going to be as good of a movie now.
I'm just wondering how the symbiote digests, like, food.
I don't know. I mean, they make references to, you know, a high fever and everything else. I don't, you know... Maybe the symbiote has its own, like, you know, method of digestion, you know, outside of the host. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe don't it's know. Just like some kind of acid, and it just breaks stuff down into more gooiness.
Yeah, because that trying to shit a human skull later is going to be very painful.
Speaking from experience.
I mean, sometimes, you know, you blow out an O-ring.
Whoa.
So... Even though this is not an MCU Marvel movie, we still get a post-credit scene. And, you know, one of the things...
We've talked about this for quite a while.
Yeah, it's like kind of like the fanboy thing. Everyone's like, if we're going to do a Venom movie, I want to see X villain show up. And there was even rumors like, maybe that's the... Because but even with the trailers, we never knew who the bad guy of the film was. We saw plenty of Venom fighting... foot soldiers, but there was never any clue of who our big bad was going to be. And people were like, I think Carnage is going to show up. I think Carnage is going to show up. And, you know, at the end, you see Eddie going to a prison. And him and Venom is like, what are we doing? He's like, this is not a me and you thing. This is a me thing. I'm going to interview a guy. So just be quiet and don't kill anybody. All right. And they go. He's supposedly interviewing a serial killer. And he gets into the back into the prison, and it's very much a Silence of the Lambs type.
I very much got the Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, and he's going to visit this famous serial killer, Cletus Cassidy, played by Woody Harrelson. And he's like, "Hello, Mr. Brock." He's like, "If and when I escape, there will be carnage." And it's like, yes!
But what if they never let him escape?
Yeah, this is a cock tease. We never get a Venom 2. There's never any carnage. It's like, because as far as we know, all the symbiotes that landed here on Earth died. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, don't remember Carnage's origin story of where he came from, but we've at least seen the human that becomes Carnage in the comics. And Woody Harrelson as a ginger just looked really weird. And he did a good job of being creepy as fuck in that, you know, short scene that he had. So if that's going to be our big bad next movie, I'm sold. It's like, all right, I'm cool.
Yeah, it needs to happen. Can it happen under a PG-13 geyser?
Yeah, I mean, can they go R-rated for the next next installment? That's one thing too. You know, it had the violence. I mean, he does like eat people and whatnot, but the way they shot it, it wasn't as gruesome as it could have been.
Like, no, I mean, because even like the biting of the heads and stuff, like the camera pans away. There's not a lot of blood and gore.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, I think...
Or you get it from the perspective of the person getting their head bat up. So you just see the mouth coming down and like the screen goes black.
I mean, I think really the biggest thing that probably gave this the PG-13 rating was, okay, the...
He said pussy, so we got to give it a PG-13.
Probably just the language, you know? Which there were no like, you know, Deadpool-esque F-bombs, you know?
But Carnage is like, I mean, he's not only a symbiote, he's a serial killer possessed by a symbiote. I think the next one, if you're going to go full Carnage, it's got to be bloodier and more visceral. So I don't know if they may have to up the rating standards to get us a good sequel.
And that's kind of been the big thing, right? I mean, here Venom has always had a little bit of a sense of, you know, morality.
Yeah.
Whereas Carnage, none.
Yeah.
It's Venom minus the morality aspect.
Yeah, because, you know, Eddie Brock, you know, for, you know, maybe a little overzealous reporter, but, you know, he has humanity, especially in the way, so like, you know, kind of Venom has learned humanity from the person he's possessed, where Carnage possesses a guy who has no humanity. So there's definitely no inner conscious. To see a full-on Carnage, I think you're going to have to make it a little more leeway with the ratings to get us a good full-on Venom 2.
And then again, you know, outside of, you know, just knowing that it's a symbiote that possessed a serial killer, you know, a lot of people didn't, you know, quite get what, you know, Venom, you know. I mean, I think if you're a comic book fan, you're very familiar, you know, if you've read anything from The Amazing Spider-Man or, you know, any of the Carnage issues or... But, you know, that's going back quite a few, you know, comic series ago. So, are they going to have to expand upon Carnage origin and how it ties into Venom?
That was the other thing, too, since this is a Venom who's never been exposed to Spider-Man. He doesn't have the big white spider logo on his, too. So that was just, like, visually, it was, like, a little bit weird. And I'm wondering, since, you know, this is Sony, if they're going to eventually bring in like Spider-Man.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it very well could be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different directions they could go.
Yeah, this is, like I said, when you're dealing outside of the standard MCU, it's rights and storylines get a little...
I know in the Marvel, you know, in the Amazing Spider-Man, Eddie Brock was, you know, at one point, you know, supposed to be killed off. But the character was wildly popular, and they're like, no, we're not going to do that. So they basically created, you know, a character, you know, that had no human no real morality or anything, known as Carnage, which we've discussed. And, you know, Cletus Kasady, one of the interesting things is it's basically Marvel's Joker, you know, for all intent and purposes. So, I mean, you know, going back, number 344 and, you know, The Amazing Spider-Man, and that's when Cletus originally gets introduced.
Yeah, and Carnage was actually an offspring of Venom. So it was like a part of Venom that... So yeah, we don't technically have, you know, if we go with that origin, we don't have to have new symbiotes coming from, you know, that somehow part of Venom can detach and become Carnage at some point. So yeah, I mean, there's options of how they're gonna, yeah, but also have to wait and see and how this all takes place. But as we're kind of wrapping up, any final thoughts on this here cigar?
Full body, looks like you full
need
flavor.
To relight.
I do need to relight. I gotta tell you, man. So I've smoked some oily wrapped cigars before, and most tend to leave a bitterness, you know, with the draw. This did not. I don't really know what all I'm picking up on this cigar. Herbs and spice and everything nice. I guess is about the way I can sum it up. I mean, yeah, you got the double Ajero. That, you know, comes through with a touch of spice. You have a herbal, you know, plantiness that is, you know, hey, it's tobacco. But then you have this oil slicked wrapper that just gives a mouthfeel that's like,
it's very smooth in the mouthfeel. It's like, yeah,
it's almost too smooth. Like,
you don't realize you have a cigar in your mouth.
Like, it almost feels plastic.
Yeah. And then this, I mean, it's definitely full body, full strength, but this pyramid shape, you know, how it kind of necks down, so the tobacco, I guess, feels like it gets tighter as it goes. So it almost like focuses the strength. It feels like it's gotten, the strength has picked up as the cigar, you know, goes along, as it gets, like, you know, kind of a tighter ring gauge as it goes, which is kind of an interesting transition. A lot of your cigars will start off strong and then kind of taper out as you go and you mellow out a little bit, where this one has kind of had the opposite effect, where it felt like it's gotten a little stronger as we've gone on, which I like. I do like a good kick in the teeth.
This is a very good cigar for those of you who retro hell. Very, very good cigar. I mean, it's got a nice aroma. It's pleasant. And like you said, it's got a spiciness, but I guess because of the taper, like, it concentrates on the palate. Like, yeah. It's not... I don't know. I'm not one who has smoked a lot of Partagas cigars.
Yeah, I think we did the 1845 at one point a long time ago. But yeah, it's not one that's kind of worked into my everyday smoking repertoire.
But this is one of those cigars that has landed a unique smoking experience. And those are kind of, you know, I mean, every cigar is unique. You know, you can buy the same brand out of the same box and, you know, they're going to smoke a little bit differently. This is not familiar out of any other cigar I've had. So, I mean, it
may need to get like the regular non-pyramid black label and see if that concentration like pours out. If that shape is a different smoking experience than this one as well. An interesting experiment.
So because it is so unique, I don't have, you know, all the necessary words to describe the unique smoking experience. And that's the thing that people miss, you know, when they don't smoke alone at home, is the experience. So if you would like to experience the Partagas Black Label, visit your local brick and mortar. If they don't have it, request it. Unless you're that one shop. Because fuck those guys.
What the fuck are you talking about now?
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Tacos?
No. We're not going to be a shop. But, now you want to. You
know. Yeah, that shop.
Now you know.
And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the podcast. It's time to learn some shit. Get all scientific like a lab rat in a symbiote jail. Or something like that.
Symbiote jail.
I don't know. Whatever freaking the Life Foundation's lab was.
You know, I think it was Umbrella HQ is what they meant to say.
Yeah, it did look very Umbrella-esque.
I meant to bring that up during the main topic, but, you know, so much like when we podcast, my greatest ideas come after we turn off the mics.
Well, speaking of symbiotes from another planet, you know, we always say, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it may be aliens. And this time it's Irish aliens.
Whoa, they're trying to steal our Guinness?
Yeah. Friday, November 9th at 6:47 local time, British Airways pilots announced a UFO sighting off the coast of Ireland. A pilot signaled air traffic control and asked if there was any kind of military exercises going in the area because he saw something that was moving unnaturally fast. And, you know, air traffic control could not pick up any kind of radar signatures, and there was no reported military aircraft in the area. And during this conversation, other pilots kind of came on the air and was like, we too have seen unexplained shit. So it's not just an isolated incident. Apparently during this, there was several different aircraft that spotted whatever these objects were.
That sounds to me like a meteor.
Well, that's the thing is, but, and one of the pilots said, you know, that he thought it might've been meteors because there was, he saw several of them, and even later on, a scientist was like, oh, it was probably just a shooting star or whatnot. But the part that, to me, it's like, this doesn't sound like a shooting star, is one of the pilots said that the object, whatever it was, you know, that was a very bright light, came up along the left side of the aircraft before rapidly veering to the north. So if it was a meteor or shooting star, wouldn't that stuff be coming from, like, up down instead of from down up? And, you know, things that are falling don't normally make, you know, 90 degree turns and like take off at like twice the speed of sound is what they're describing.
Ah, maybe it hit an updraft or something in the atmosphere.
Or it's totally aliens.
It could be aliens. I'll allow it.
Yes, but you know, at this point, you know, the whatever the Irish version of the FAA says, it's currently under investigation. So, you know, they've not completely ruled it out as meteors or whatnot, but so they're definitely looking into this to figure out what is. Yeah, the Irish Aviation Authority says this report will be investigated under normal confidential occurrence investigation process.
So it'll be buried somewhere, yeah. Very so deep in the archives.
The Irish Men in Black, and we're not talking about the Guinness factory workers, will look into this and never tell us what it is.
Maybe they'll get drunk and forget it's classified.
Or come up with the usual bullshit excuse of, it was a weather balloon. Isn't that what the government always claims when someone spots a UFO?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, what's next on the agenda?
So, speaking of, you know, UFOs. If you'll remember a while ago, we talked about the sighting of a cigar-shaped interstellar object that entered our solar system. Well, now, in a new study published in the Astronomical Journal, the government space agency reveals that when they went to look at the object recently after it, you know, initial sightings, you know, back in September, they were unable, the Spitzer Space Telescope was, they were unable to detect it. It just kind of disappeared. And they're saying some of the tracking of it appears that this thing actually accelerated, like non-gravitational acceleration. So it's not something that, like, you know, the gravity of a planet or the sun, you know, things like that kind of tend to travel at a certain speed or a certain max speed, where this, not only was it unnaturally reflective at the time, was also appeared to accelerate away when it should not. If it was just something on a ballistic core, shouldn't actually pick up speed like this. So, like, there's some scientists saying that this may have been some kind of alien spacecraft from another galaxy.
So it's an alien sailboat.
Yeah, they're thinking it may have been...
picked up a solar flare that, you know, just pushed it right along faster than anticipated.
Yeah, there's some of the theories that it was some kind of solar sail spacecraft, you know, while other scientists are like, ah, oh, it's completely bullshit. It's the Onam Mawa Mawa object. but another thing, too, is that it's... super, the fact that it was very reflective, you know, comets and stuff get that when it passes close to like a star or some kind of other object that kind of refreezes the outside or change, but the trajectory of this thing coming in, it did not pass close enough to other objects to cause that kind of reflectiveness that they've noted in other objects. So that's kind of a mystery, and also the fact that it, you know, kind of disappeared off, we're no longer able to detect
maybe
it when we
something
should
there
have
undiscovered because there's a black hole.
So again, not saying it's aliens, but it's probably aliens. And even some of the scientists that have been claiming that this was some kind of spacecraft said it looked like it may have had vents that released gas to you know, propel it and change course and whatnot. So it's like, they said not only did it kind of have unnatural speed, it moved like it shouldn't have, you know, and wasn't just being affected by planetary gravity. It was, you know,
being
might have had some kind
by
of control.
A black hole. It's the Twilight Zone.
Yep. So I mean, that's kind of a weird thing too. We're getting like, we're having a lot more like, you know, not your crazy guy talking about we saw aliens, but. I mean, the Pentagon and the government have been releasing like UFO footage and have admitted to having, you know, divisions that studied, you know, UFOs and whatnot. So, I mean, do you think someone finally admits like, yeah, there's aliens, bro. We've just been not telling you. Because it seems like they're giving us a lot more information than they used to.
Or maybe this is just a big marketing ploy for, you know, Men in Black 4.
That could also be.
Like, all of these articles of unexplained things, like, you know, I mean, you just never know.
It's
just
a weird viral marketing program.
It wouldn't be the first weird viral marketing program.
True enough. But yeah, it seems like we're getting a lot, the amount of UFO sightings and governments admitting to UFO sightings have kind of increased over the last few years, which is...
What would Mulder and Scully do?
They would say it was totally aliens. And then Scully would say it was some kind of like weird weather phenomenon. Or drones. So, to move away from aliens to rabid raccoons, a small West Virginia town of Milton has been terrorized by alcoholic raccoons.
I mean, raccoons, just in their right, are pretty mischievous.
Damn trash pandas.
And they can be, you know, quite fierce as well, you know? They pack some pretty killer claws.
But yeah, apparently...
I mean, I don't think I want to scrap with a trash panda.
No, especially if it's Rocket Raccoon. He'll fuck you up. So yeah, apparently there's been recently a rash of reportings of possibly rabid raccoons. They say they've been kind of wandering the town, glassy-eyed and stumbling. Well, after a few of them were captured, they realized that, no, that's not an outbreak of rabies, it's drunk raccoons. They've been eating fermented crab apples and have gotten jacked up on fermented crab apple juice. And, you know, they say it's actually quite common. We never see it. It usually occurs, like, you know, out in the woods and nature and stuff, so it doesn't occur, you know, publicly enough that we are familiar with drunken raccoons. But yeah, they're like, no, this is perfectly normal. Like, still don't touch them because they may still, you know, it may not be drunk. It may be rabid, or you just really don't want to fuck with a hungover raccoon. Cause I know I'm grumpy as shit when I'm hungover. Raccoon will bite your ass. Or he'll like, I mean, I didn't remember that video we saw a while back of the raccoon that got loose in a brewery and had broken up a whole case of beer and was just hammered as shit when the employees came the next day.
So, are we going to have, like, RAA or something? Raccoon Alcoholics Anonymous, you know?
This could be another viral marketing for Avengers 4 or whenever that comes out. It's like, yeah. Rocket, you know, became an alcoholic after he lost Groot, and he's an AA.
Oh my God! Somebody needs to do a fan film of one of these drunken raccoons, and you know, it's like the suffering from a long lost friend.
I mean, is there field sobriety for raccoons? Can you make them walk a straight line? give them HGN. see if they display the same characteristics as drunken humans. I mean, we did watch that documentary on the drunken monkeys on that one island that kept stealing alcohol. So it's kind of weird when you see nature, like, you know, we're not such distant. We're all animals when it comes down to it, because, you know, alcoholics in nature kind of same as alcoholics in human.
So now I'm thinking about alcoholic apple juice and how that would probably be delicious. And I'm not just talking like some red crisp apple or something.
I mean, break out the good old Dragon Con pie and get drunk with your raccoon buddy.
I mean, it is West Virginia. That's shining territory.
Now I want to see the West Virginia ninja fight a drunken raccoon. That'd be a video for you. But now moving from fake news to actual fake news, apparently, Skynet now has its own news team. The Xinhao, which is China's state-run news agency, just revealed it has made a digitally reconstructed news anchor powered by artificial intelligence. So they've hired two reporters, one that's for the Mandarin-speaking audience and one for the English-speaking audience, that are completely, you know, virtually created. And from the pictures, if you did not know you were looking at a, you know, animated anchor, they look like real people, which is kind of crazy. But it's you know, basically runs off an AI that they simply just kind of type in the news script, and the computer will read it. But it also not only synthesizes voice, but it completes with like gestures and facial expressions that you would expect someone who is actually giving the news to display.
That's some Skynet shit.
Yeah, I mean, because they're like, well, we never have a news anchor that's going to, like, you know, give you an opinion. His opinion is whatever we program his opinion to be, so they don't have to worry about somebody going off script. And they're also saying that, like, well, we're going to save a whole bunch of money because these artificial reporters can work 24 hours a day. We don't have to pay multiple. The damn robots are taking our jobs.
We were only paying. Shit. So driving to Atlanta every day, there's a thing for one of the retirement companies. And it's like, you know, how to not worry about, you know, losing your job to robots. Retire.
Well, if you're a Chinese news anchor, it may be that time. I mean, literal fake news. And this is also, since it's the government-controlled news agency, they can have them tell you whatever they want to, which is also kind of Skynet creepy.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm a big thumbs down to communism.
Yeah, so when the Terminators come, you know, our fake robotic news anchors will be like, oh, they're here to protect us. Don't worry. They're not going to kill all of humanity. Do not panic. They come in peace.
That's probably a sign that they're here to kill all humanity.
Yep, because now we've turned over Skynet to our news agencies to Skynet. So that's all I got for you this week.
Arcana, where are you?
And scary robot news and drunken raccoons. We'll be right back with, you know, our non-fake news.
Greetings, Starfighters. It's Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast. Join me and the Rusty crew as we break down the latest geeky movie trailers, talk about TV, comics, toys, games, casting news, and all things nerdy. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the ESO Network, and at therustedrobot.podbean.com. The Rusted Robot Podcast, your source for geek since 2014.
The Rusted Robot Podcast. Think about it.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
All right, so, you know, we've talked a lot about Venom. We've talked a lot about just Marvel in general. And, you know, this week, we, you know, had the passing of the, you know, greatest, most influential person to make all of our nerdy, you know, superheroes and, you know, comic figures actually come to life, Stan Lee.
Yeah, the godfather of pulp culture and, I mean, the inventor of the superhero genre.
And, after the passing, obviously, you know, being a member of many of the Dragon Con groups, you know, a lot of people were posting, you know, their photos from last year's con and, or I guess the year before last. But, you know, I still go back to that memory of, you know, Joe and I, and I think Amanda, and, you know, I mean, there was less than 10 people on this back hallway, and, you know, a few security guys, you know, hey, step to the side here, and, you know, here comes Stan, you know, buzzing by on, you know,
freaking Rascal Scooter.
The Rascal, and, you know, I mean, it was like, holy shit, that's as close to a real life Stan Lee cameo as you can ever get. Yes. I mean, you know.
Oh, because I mean, I have an autographed picture of Stan in my office at home, and that, you know, one of the first years he came to the con when he was the Grand Marshal of the Dragon Con parade. And, you know, I was able, cause I like seeing celebrities. I like talking to them, but I rarely like will pay for an autograph. Cause I'm like, whatever. But for Stan, I'm like, I've got to meet the dude and get the autograph for, you know, cause it's Stan fucking Lee, you know? But yeah, that's like, oh, I mean, the dude, 95, so he had a good long run, but just when you look at the sheer vastness of all the things he created, I mean, like, without Stan, we got no Spider-Man, no X-Men, no you know, most of Marvel. I mean, and he was like, you know, kind of when the MCU started their movie, you know, career, you know, he was kind of instrumental in all that as well. So it's like, not only has he influenced movie culture forever, I mean, he's influenced, you know, I mean, comic book culture forever. You know, he's, you know, influenced movie culture. I mean, he was kind of responsible for, you know, when, you know, Blade, like our first actual foray into a good comic book movie. You know, he's like kind of just, you know, started it all. It's,
I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest thing that, you know, he never lost the passion, you know, for the fans. I mean, you know, as much success and everything else, you know, that he had, I mean, you know, it's like he never got too big to, you know, kick it with the people, you know, supporting him, you know, on the ground. And I think about how big of a company, you know, Marvel is and all of the great things. And then I think, you know, about, you know, certain comic conventions and stuff that, you know, may only have a few hundred thousand, you know, fans or something who can't hit that mark with a few hundred. But yet we have a man that's able to do it with, you know, hundreds of millions of fans. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, looking back, I mean, yeah, truly a larger than life character.
Yeah, that and the Stan Lee cameo has become like a thing that you look forward to in every like Marvel movie, and not just the MCU branded movies. If it's a Marvel movie, there's a Stan Lee cameo in it. Now, he's been in the Fox Marvel movies. He's been in the Sony Marvel movies. It's like, if this is something Marvel adjacent, you're guaranteed a Stan Lee cameo. And it's like that one thing, it's like the little Easter egg we all watch when we sit down to, like, you know, watch him, like, where's Stan going to show up? Like, what are they going to use him for next? And, I mean, even way back, like, his very first cameo was in, like, the original Hulk TV series. There's an episode called the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, and Stan Lee is one of the jurors. So, you know, it's not even, like, a modern phenomenon. Like, Stan Lee is, like, if there's a, you know, screen adaptation of a Marvel movie, sure enough, Stan Lee's gonna appear at some point. It's kind of like, you know, there's gonna be a day when we get a Marvel movie where there's no Stan Lee. It's just gonna be just weird, like not having that little Easter egg pop up. So, out of all the cameos, do you have a favorite Stan Lee cameo?
Strip club DJ.
That's about what I was going to say, was that first Deadpool movie where Stan's the strip club DJ.
I mean,
this is so odd to see, because he's like kind of like your grandpa. This is like Stan Lee spinning, you know, welcome Charity to the stage. It just was so weird.
I mean,
it's like, you know, fuck yeah, there's Stan.
But I mean, you know, that's a great thing, is, you know, I mean, it just, you know, like we talked about most recently, you know, with the Venom film and stuff like that. I mean, you know, just those 30-second snippets. I mean, it's just like, there's the man, you know. And like you said, you know, there's going to be a time to where that doesn't happen. And,
package for Tony Stank.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it just, unfortunately, you know, we knew it was a possibility, and, you know, now it is a reality, and it's, you know, I think the world's a little darker place.
Yep.
I just hope, you know, that going on his influence and everything, you know, over a lot of what we've seen with, you know, the MCU, the Sonys, and, you know, now with the Fox and Disney mergings and everything else, that, you know, the attitude and, you know, the breath of life that he, you know, breathed into creating, you know, all these superheroes and, you know, this universe that we have the ability to explore just outside of, you know, not just limited to comic books and things of that nature. You know, I hope that isn't lost.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think, you know, 5 years from now without his influence, you know, franchises that have become so huge and so successful, you know, what do they look like?
Yeah. And I saw in like all the tributes and memes that have been popping up, I did see one that said now they should replace the Stan Lee cameo with Deadpool cameos, but he should be dressed as Stan Lee. Just like the full costume, but with like glasses and fake mustache and wig.
I don't know. I've seen that, and I don't know. I mean, I just can't wait for the next documentary, you know, to come out, you know, and learn all the, you know, little
facts. Yeah, if anybody in the age of like these bioepic movies where like, you know, we got the Bohemian Rhapsody movie and all, if anybody deserves a movie about his life, the Stan Lee movie is something that absolutely should happen, and should, that would be a super interesting movie. Yeah, I don't know who would play Stan, but I did see some images of Bryan Cranston as Stan Lee.
I've seen that, and I mean, so, I don't know.
I think, you know, a couple of years, that's something that definitely should happen, is a Stan Lee, you know, not, you know, a Stan Lee biopic would be pretty awesome.
Alrighty, so, you know, just wanted to pay, you know, tribute to the late, you know, Stan Lee. Moving on to new endeavors. The Castlevania Netflix series kind of drew me in. I really enjoyed it. It looks like now Devil May Cry, another very successful video game franchise, maybe, you know, is being developed by...
Have you watched Season 2 yet of Castlevania?
I have not watched Season 2
me either.
Yet.
I've not had a chance to sit down and watch that yet. I've been working on Daredevil Season 3.
So, that's a very convincing Dante. And unfortunately, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot. But, I mean, I would love to see... Because God of War is one of the great action games where there's a lot of action, but there's a lot of good storytelling that happens in a relatively short span. It isn't one of those games that's going to take you thousands of hours, you know, of in-game content and stuff like that. So, I would very much like to see this.
You mean Devil May Cry?
Yes.
So God of War?
Well, yeah, Devil May Cry. Whatever, you know. Devil May Cry, God of War, they're all great. They all kind of follow that same action thing, but yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of excited to see what holds. Up next is... We talked, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 episodes back about a Dumbo trailer from Tim Burton. And,
of all people, Tim Burton.
But, I mean, it's reimagined. I mean, you know, so have you seen the second trailer yet?
I don't think I've seen watched the second one yet. But the first one was
This is
was
a fucking
weird.
Tearjerker of a trailer, and you haven't watched it.
I don't like crying.
You're going to cry.
No.
Because I'm pretty sure everybody on Twitter has cried.
I don't want to do it. I did see the one, like, image with him dressed as a clown that looked creepy as shit.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the, you know, the first step. But, I mean... Holy shit at the emotional roller coaster. The more I see of this, the more I'm like, fuck, I'm going to go have to see this by myself.
I'm not crying, you're crying.
Yeah, you know, damn onion cutting ninjas. I mean, holy shit.
Which
I mean,
are the worst kind of ninjas.
Yes. I mean, but it's crazy. I'm like, I'm hooked, you know? I mean, it's like I'm going to see it, and there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, typically would not necessarily be, oh, it's a family film, you know. I'll you know, it doesn't fit my normal niche, so I'll pass. Like, I don't know. Looks great. We'll link to it. Check it out. Another film that got a new trailer was Alita: Battle Angel, and I had to go and start doing some research on my anime to get more familiar with this franchise, because outside of the fact that, yes, she isn't quite human, and the big anime eyes, I've gotten over it now. Like, you see a lot more action and intense, you know, sequences in this updated trailer. And, yeah, it looks freaking awesome.
Yeah, because I'm not familiar with that that anime, but it looks badass from the trailer. So I'm like, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, and the second one just you know, amped that scale up quite a bit. All right, well, you can't do a podcast without talking about Disney. Oh wait, we've already talked about Disney. Well, here we go. This is for the thrill seekers. So we've got the first look and some new details for the Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster. This will be Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida at Epcot. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm a roller coaster junkie. I mean, I don't care. I will travel 10 hours to go and check out a new coaster if it's going to deliver a good thrill. So this will be a indoor cat coaster, and it is being built on one of the largest concrete floors that Disney has ever constructed. It also said that the building housing the attraction will be big enough to house 4 spaceship Earths.
Ooh, that's be big as fuck.
The vehicles that riders will be sitting in will change direction in order to follow the story being told throughout the attraction, which is kind of cool. So, we're going to talk about some Star Wars stuff, involving thrill rides here shortly. And one of the things that I'm seeing as kind of a new trend is making coasters more immersive, either introducing a VR element or, you know, giving riders an interactive thing that they can actually fail at.
With the applications of VR, you know, the roller coaster ride is just kind of hitting the next generation, which is, I'm excited to. I've not been to Disney in a long ass time, but I may have to make the trip to check that out, or especially once the new Star Wars land gets opened. Because, you know, when you're talking about the, you know, interactive that you can fail at, is because they've kind of announced they've said there's going to be a Millennium Falcon ride, but we've finally gotten some more details of that, because they've already said there's going to be like a hotel that's going to be like an interactive experience, but now the Millennium Falcon ride is going to be some kind of, you know, smuggler experience that where you can actually kind of fail your mission. So it's like, yeah, it's like you're going to be a crew member on the Falcon. So it's, and that definitely gives it like a rewrite ability where like, oh, you're going to have a different outcome every time. So it's going to be one of those, it's like, it's not the same experience every time you jump in. I mean, every time you're going to have play a different part or have a different outcome depending on, you know, who you end up on the ride with.
Yeah, well, they're actually calling this, you know, from the description, each cab, instead of, you know, just whizzing by a set or something like that and seeing it up, you know, ahead and, hey, that looks kind of cool. Each cab will be programmed to direct your eye to the story happening around you. And the fact that, you know, cabs can go in different directions depending on, you know, the story you're in. I mean, you know, it just, I don't know. I mean, they're saying that, you know, fans will be fully immersed in the story from the minute you launch. So, you know.
I mean, we're one step closer to that Star Trek era, like, holodeck experience.
Well, you know, I did see a thing, you know, that I thought was kind of cool. You know, it was an indoor go-kart track, but they put a VR helmet on you. So, you know, I mean, you could almost
live-action Mario Kart.
You know, live-action Mario Kart. Now, this one here was more of a, like, just the scenery around you changed. So, you know, like, you would be driving and all of a sudden you would have to turn to avoid a falling object or, you know, fire, you know, shooting up from the ground in front of you or something. But I'm like, I don't know. If you suck at video game driving, then...
I'm crashing.
And instead of being like, oh, I hit the tires. No, you know, they're going to keep going because they're immersed in this VR world. Like, no, got to get away.
Or if you're like, a fan of certain, like, all right, today you're at, you know, Racing Talladega, or you're at the, you know, Monaco Grand Prix. You know, they get the potential of, you know, putting you in like actual real world racetracks and giving you that, you know, NASCAR, IndyCar experience would be kind of, is kind of a cool concept as well, with that, you know, VR possibility. Or live action, what the fuck is it? The damn racing game with Sweet Tooth. I'm having a brain fart.
Twisted Metal.
Yes, live action Twisted Metal.
So, all right. So we'll circle back to what you were talking about. So you kind of gave it away that, yes, you will be able to, you know, pilot, you know, the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy.
I just want to be in one of the quad guns.
It looks like you can, you know, I guess each fan will sort of have, you know, unique flight crew roles. But the second video is Star Wars Rise of the Resistance, which takes place in the middle of a battle between the Resistance and the First Order. John Williams, you know, he's been a composer for Star Wars for quite some time, is actually creating a new score for the upcoming theme park. And, you know, I mean, once again, full immersion, you know, multi-day, you know, Star Wars adventure. Like, gosh, it's going to be freaking amazing.
I just want to sit in one of those gun pods and, like, run the quad cannon.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that, you know, just, you know, being at, you know, Hollywood Studios, where they have the, you know, the Star Wars ride, you know, where basically you're just sitting in the pod and you go up and down.
The Star Tours ride.
Yes, I mean, you know, I mean, just the fact that we're taking this to a whole nother level of, you know, immersion and interactiveness. I mean, it's going to be freaking amazing.
I just want to be in one of the turrets.
The lines are going to be so long.
I just want to be in one of the turrets and have some, like, you know, freaking kid in the other one, like, I got one. And be like, don't get cocky, kid.
Yes, absolutely. And then my final note is our new Lex Luthor. John Cryer will be our iconic villain for Supergirl.
Which is a kind of a weird...
kind of a weird casting.
Weird casting, but, you know, most people know him as, like, you know, Ducky from the 80s movies, or, you know, more recently, Two and a Half Men. But he showed up in the last couple seasons of NCIS playing a military doctor who was kind of an asshole. So I've seen him do more dramatic parts, but I've never seen him be evil. So I'm wondering if he's going to be able to pull off evil and maniacal. I mean, you've seen him as the goofy sidekick. You've seen him as kind of, you know, an asshole character at times. Because, like I said, he did a pretty good job on NCIS. But this is going to be something different from from him as an actor. Is, can he pull off a villain?
So, you know, but I mean, then again, you know, there's, I like to think of Lex as kind of a professional villain. So, I mean, you know, it isn't the sociopath. Well, I guess, you know, in some ways, but I don't know. I'm gonna have
Lex Luthor always thinks he's right. He does. He's one of those characters that I always like a villain that doesn't think he's the villain.
Yeah, I mean, he's egotistical, and, you know, I don't know. But they need a Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I mean, you keep bringing in. I mean, they've brought in Superman. They keep bringing in all these Superman villains, and of course they have Lana, or is it whatever. His sister has, you know, been one of the big characters on there. But, yeah, it's like, and even, like, the last episode, we've had, like, his old enforcer of Mercy Graves. So it's like you've tiptoed around the Lex Luthor legend for so long that it's like, yeah, we finally need that reveal of, you know, actual Lex Luthor.
Absolutely. Any other news or tidbits that you would like to share with the fans?
Oh, well, there, you know, we've talked about the Disney Mandalorian series. We've got some new casting news. Gina Guerrero from the, you know, former fighter, also, you know, in the first Deadpool movie, has been cast as some kind of role in the Mandalorian. And speaking of Deadpool, like, we got a trailer for Detective Pikachu, like a live action Pokemon movie that looks weird as shit. But of course, Ryan Reynolds is playing Pikachu.
What the twist?
Yeah, it's just odd. Seeing, like, those things as kind of live action versions of Pokemon is just odd looking.
I wonder if there's going to be any kind of like Deadpool, you know.
Reference. It's Ryan Reynolds. I mean, there's already been so many jokes about.
Or, you know, Pikachu. In the next, you know, Deadpool movie is just going to be a giant Pikachu the whole time.
Yeah, he's going to make fucking Pikachu jokes in the next Deadpool movie, which is weird. Hell, I even seen him endorsing, I was at a gas station, and there was a Deadpool edition Mike's Hard Lemonade with Deadpool on the bottle. I believe it was a cranberry-flavored Mike's Hard Lemonade. So, I mean, Deadpool has, like, invaded all forms of culture at this point.
And which is, I guess, why we're getting our PG-13 pre-Christmas release.
Yeah. But with that, you can check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. We're on our website at Cigar Nerd Pod, CigarNerdPodcast.com. And also, we're on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cigar Nerd Pod. You can pick up energy drinks at StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code Cigar Nerds, or shirts at RealMenSmokeCigars.com, or on our website, we have a link to our Zazzle store if you want some t-shirts. And with that, Excelsior. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.